two little boys were known troublemakers, stealing everything they could get their hands, even from the church. One day a priest stopped one of the little boys and asked, "Where is God?" The boy shrugged and the priest repeated, "Where is God?" The boy ran out of the cathedral crying to his home where he hid in a closet. Eventually his brother found him and asked, "What's wrong?" The crying boy replied, "We're in trouble now. God is missing and they think we took him." Sometimes in our lives, it feels as though God really is missing. Life sometimes can be such a challenge that we wonder if we have been forgotten because no help seems forthcoming. Today, in our Real Theology, where we look at movies as sacred text, we're reflecting on one of the biggest challenges of our time, our mental health, our well-being. A story from Scripture is the story of King Saul, which is the story of a man who began his life full of so much promise, potential, so much faith, a beloved king of Israel, but who then begins to suffer from depression and mood swings. To ease his negative thoughts, he invites a handsome young shepherd boy named David with a musical gift of playing the harp to come to his court and play for him. And the beautiful music would soothe his soul and ease his mind and give him peace. But then through the years, King Saul's mood disturbances become worse. And he begins to have paranoid thoughts that David, who is by now a faithful servant, and now very popular within his court, and who had become the best friend with King Saul's son Jonathan, and who had become his own son-in-law with his marriage to King Saul's daughter, Saul becomes obsessed about David, obsessed with the idea that David wants his throne. And eventually, he feels so threatened by everyone's admiration for David, that he attempts to kill him by throwing a spear. Eventually, his fear of David becomes such an obsession that David has to hide from King Saul. David goes into hiding because he fears for his own life. And in the passage that Nancy just read, even though the priest Ahimelech assures King Saul that there is no one in King Saul's life more loyal to the king than his son-in-law David, by now Saul's thoughts are so disturbed, his reality so confused with his imaginings and stories that he has created in his own mind, that he cannot even trust his spiritual advisor. He cannot trust God. In fact, Saul's thoughts grow so disturbed that he no longer trusts anyone and has come to believe that the stories in his mind are more real than all the assurance of his advisors and his family and his friends. Fear has overtaken King Saul to such a degree that has pushed him to violence. And he asks his guards to murder his priest Ahimelech and all the priests under him. And while the guard refuses to do the king's bidding, probably at peril to his own life, the king finds another, Doeg the Edomite, to carry out the king's insane orders. And we are told he slaughtered not only Ahimelech, the high priest, but the 85 priests who served in Israel, and all of their wives, and all of their children, and even all of the livestock of Nob. This story of a man so overwhelmed by fear that he ends up destroying himself and his own people is played out again and again in our modern society. It's an old story, but it's still present with us. How many political rulers have been so threatened of losing their own power that they slaughter and kill the people of their own country. We see it around the world today. Political rulers threatened. And some of them might not have the power to kill, but they do have the power to fire. If you get my drift. Today we would say that King Saul suffered from mental health challenges. In fact, mental health is defined as struggles with moods, thoughts, and behavior. And we see this borne out in King Saul. He suffered from depression, from paranoid delusional thoughts, which resulted in uncontrolled violent behavior and aggression. You and I live in an even more complex and demanding world. The levels of stress and anxiety, as we all know, are on the increase. Mental illness is a medical problem, just like heart disease or diabetes. Mental illnesses are health conditions involving changes in thinking, emotions, behavior, or a combination of all these. Mental illness is associated with distress or problems functioning in social, work, or family activities. It is so common. According to statistics, in any given year, 1 in 5 people in Canada will personally experience a mental health problem or illness. And it indirectly affects all Canadians at some point in our lives through a family member, a friend, or colleague. Mental illness affects people of all ages, all education, income levels, and cultures. According to Canadian Mental Health, approximately 8% of adults in Canada will experience major depression at some time in their lives. And by age 40, about 50% of Canadians will have or have had a mental illness. And yet, there is still so much stigma associated with our mental health that many will not seek out help or treatment. They won't reach out a hand like in a circle of love because they feel ashamed. And so it goes untreated. There are over 200 mental health diagnoses and disorders. So how do we begin to address this issue in our contemporary society, an issue in which so many people are suffering? James von Prague, an author of several books, suggests that healing always begins first with us, if we're able. He explains from a spiritual standpoint that we have 4 bodies. We have a thought body that's about here, an emotional body, an energy body, and then our physical body. And he says that some of our diseases are actually the result of repetitive negative thoughts over and over again in our minds. When we experience a trauma in our life, we might blame ourselves and tell ourselves that we are worthless or stupid or unlovable, that it's our fault, and that life is never going to get any better. And these consistent negative thoughts then impact our emotions, and we become sad and depressed or angry and resentful. And then these negative feelings impact our energy, and we have difficulty getting motivated, and we lose our will. And then it finally impacts our physical bodies, and we become ill. I think that there may be some truth to this with some mental health, not all. Much of mental health has a genetic or biological, a medical issue associated with it. But while much of our pain, our distress is physical, Our minds, our thoughts can be very powerful. And when we try to realign our thoughts, it can impact our mood and emotions, which can impact and lift our spirits, which can bring about greater healing. Studies indicate that prayers and healing thoughts directed toward people can speed the healing process. So if we can change our thoughts, which we alone have control over, perhaps we can alter our mood and increase our energy. If King Saul could have realized that he was the one generating his thoughts about David, and it wasn't based on any reality, if he could have trusted the people around him and altered his thoughts about David, the drastic outcome of his destructive decisions could have been avoided. If he had refused to listen to his own negative self-talk, instead of being utterly lost in his own world and self-created reality, perhaps his life and the lives of all those around him could have been spared and been so much better and life-giving. But he allowed his negative thoughts to rule his reality instead of creating the reality he hoped for and becoming the person he really was, a beautiful and good and faithful soul. Because that's who we all are at our center, beautiful, whole, and complete souls. It's our minds that tell us otherwise. Today in our Real Theology series, we're reflecting on the movie A Beautiful Mind, based on the true story of mathematician John Nash, a prominent young Princeton graduate with a brilliant mind that produced a mathematical equation to prove a theory which states that the best decisions we make are motivated not just out of self-interest, but in balance with the interests of the whole community. This theory is still used in trade negotiations and in resolving human conflicts around the world. But while John Nash's mind was so brilliant, unbeknownst to everyone around him, including himself, he also suffered from schizophrenia and began to have paranoid delusions. He underwent the horrors of electric shock therapy, but that did little to ease his mental torment. So where did John Nash's help and healing come from? Let's watch a clip from the Academy Award-winning movie A Beautiful Mind, from the scene in which John Nash and his wife make a decision on how to treat John's diagnosis. The scene opens with Christopher Plummer, who's the psychiatrist, telling John that in order to control his delusions, in which he imagines people that really aren't there, he will need to return to the hospital for more electric shock therapy. But John is determined to find another way to heal. John Nash begins his real healing process with two important decisions. First, his decision, his own inner determination to utilize his own mind to heal his thoughts. And the second decision is by opening his heart to help and receive love from the people around him. Nash, who had been a little self-possessed and arrogant and competitive at Princeton because he was a genius, decides to humble himself and return there, not as a professor, but to work in the library to resume his mathematical formulations. And it is by wrestling with his thoughts day after day, recognizing what is delusion and what is reality, that he begins to heal his life, to make a new life for himself, and find inner peace and a rich contentment. Every healing begins with ourselves, our determination and tenacity, but it also depends on the support of a community, our family, our friends, our church. Yesterday in this sanctuary, I had the honor of celebrating the life of Patrick Key, In his early 20s, Patrick was diagnosed with schizophrenia, and he struggled from that point on. But in spite of being on and off medications throughout his life, Patrick still chose to have positive life experiences. He was married for 11 years and considered it the highlight of his life. He enjoyed his work as a farrier and chopping wood. He enjoyed being productive and purposeful. It was important to him that he find a way to contribute. He loved the world of horses, and he enjoyed his friendships at Forward House and at the Salvation Army Church. His sister Linda and other family members also gave support to Patrick whenever they could. And he was a deeply spiritual man who found peace through his faith in God's love for him. And so because of all those things, he had the courage to ride the bucking bronco of life and become the good cowboy, the good soul he sought to be. Mental health issues are a struggle in our time, but there is hope. We can live meaningful lives when we have faith that God is with us and heaven is cheering us on. When we have the courage and determination to endure and heal our negative thoughts. And when we open our hearts to love and surround ourselves with caring and supportive and helping people and communities. Our world is full of stress and struggle. We need the understanding and support of one another. We can't do it alone. That's why at Knox we have In This Together support group. That's why we have the healing teams. That's why we have the pastoral care team making phone calls and visits. That's why we have the centering prayer that grounds us, the meditation class that help to know who we are, to give us the spiritual strength and the community support to do this challenge we call our own lives. So let's live into the values God has set before us, to live compassion towards one another, to take away the stigma of mental health issues because we all struggle at one time or another. Let's really care about how we are with one another. Let us live inclusion where no one is left out and everyone belongs and feels accepted. Let us live into joy and celebrate life even when we're going through pain and difficulty. And let us trust in spirit and grow in our faith in God so that we might have the strength to endure. For suffering produces endurance, and endurance produces character, and character produces hope, and hope does not disappoint. So together, may we heal our lives and our world. May it be so.